hate. No hype. No fear. We are TFR Frequency Radio.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you guys so much for tuning in once again to the program. My name's JD. We are live right now. This is, of course, the Red Pill Reports radio broadcast on your very favorite network for truth and alternative information, Truth Frequency Radio. You can find us at truthfrequencyradio.com, and you can also find us at redpillreports.com, and also on the dial at 90.7 in beautiful Denver, Colorado. Today is the 30th day of April, the last day of the month, and it is a Thursday. I don't know if that means anything to you guys out there. I like to think of Thursday as Friday evening. I hope you guys are gearing up for a wonderful weekend. I know it's a day short, but still, we're going to get there, I think, everybody together. I hope you guys are doing well wherever you are at. The weather is beautiful here in Missouri, and I hope you guys are getting some sunshine wherever you guys are at. I am completely overwhelmed again today, ladies and gentlemen. Now, many of you guys know that a couple of days ago, we were trying to figure out what exactly we were going to do with the future of the Red Pill Reports, and we really put it to the audience to try and help us figure out exactly which direction we were going to go in. We started this crowdfunding operation, and it has been incredibly successful so far. People are absolutely making their voices heard, letting us know that you guys want us to stay on the air, and I have to tell you, I am absolutely humbled by some of the responses and some of the donations that we have gotten. We certainly have enough right now to stay active for at least another 2 months. So no matter what, you guys have at least another 8 weeks of good quality shows in front of you guys. We do have a pretty lofty goal. We would like to try and hit that by the end of the month. Just not this month, obviously, because we've only got a day left. Although, don't let that stand in your way if you want to just nip this thing in the butt right away. But we've definitely got enough that we can kind of keep ourselves going here and stay on the air and continue to provide for you guys some amazing shows. We've got some amazing stuff coming up today. Dr. Brooks Agnew is going to be on the show. Holy cow, what background this gentleman has got. He is, of course, right now the CEO of Sirius Energy Corporation. They are working really hard to bring to the market affordable electronic pickup trucks, and they are super rad. So we're going to get kind of up to date on what's going on with that organization. But I'll tell you, his experience just general in life is so outstanding. His research that he does just across the board, very diverse in terms of the many facets of education that this gentleman has got. So we'll probably talk quite a bit about some current events as well, because I want to bring his amazing, diverse education to bear on some of the things that are going on around us right now. So he will be joining us. Dr. Brooks Agnew be joining us in about an hour. I definitely recommend you guys check out his show. Also here on Truth Frequency, called X Squared, occurs on Sunday evenings. Really, really high quality stuff. It's kind of an open forum scientific discussion. He has a PhD in physics, by the way. So perhaps we should get him on the Woo Crew at some point. I don't know. But anyway, going to be a fantastic discussion with him in about an hour. And then tomorrow, Carl Lehrberger is going to be joining us. He is the author of Secrets of Ancient America. The question really on the table that I think we probably already all know the answer to is, did Christopher Columbus really discover America? Spoiler alert, no. So anyway, he has written a nearly 400-page book called Secrets of Ancient America. Absolutely amazing, amazing stuff. Definitely recommend you guys pick this up if you have interest in this stuff. And just bear in mind, you know, when I'm recommending these books to you guys, it's not for my own edification here. I'm not, we don't get anything out of the deal from recommending books. This is just me as a guy who's reading saying, man, this is a pretty neat book, and there's a heck of a lot of amazing pictures in it. And for somebody like me that kind of grew up here in the Midwest, really close to the Cahokia Mounds, which they just don't talk about in our schools anymore, there's so much stuff buried just under. I'm always thinking about The Simpsons. Whenever The Simpsons do some sort of, cutaway shot of the ground, you know, they'll do like some kind of thing where they're showing what's going on under the ground. It's always really short distances to amazing things on The Simpsons. And this book really makes me feel like maybe we're all living in that same world, that potentially just a couple of feet, you know, below our feet under the grass, elongated skulls and the giants and all kinds of weird stuff, you know, symbolism that's traces its way back through history. But amazing book. I'm really looking forward to talking to this gentleman tomorrow. I hope you guys are geared up for that. And so that's kind of where we are at today. Again, if you guys haven't hit the donation page at redpillreports.com, we are imploring you to do that. We're trying to get us funded all the way through Christmas Carol time, basically. And then we can stop talking about this, because I have enough stuff to talk about today that I don't want to talk about that. But check out the GoFundMe. It is under the moniker Red Pill Reports. Easy to find. It's also on our Facebook page. Please come friends with us on the Facebook page, too. There's a lot of stuff that goes on. Most of our articles that we print go straight to the Facebook page. So definitely check that out. We're also on Twitter. Appreciate you guys all hanging out with us there. Really big shout out to everybody in the chat room this morning, too. Appreciate you guys sharing the show and getting your friends involved. We've got a lot to talk about this morning. So let's just hop right into the international news right now. Some new reports coming out of Korea, by the way, of South Korea, but apparently North Korea's Kim Jong-un and his amazing new haircut actually ordered the execution of 15 senior officials this year so far already, including several who complained about the young leader's policies. And this is all, again, coming from South Korea's intelligence agencies, and they reported all of this yesterday. So these executed people included two vice minister-level officials, according to a news agency there, and also citing legislators who attended the briefing by the National Intelligence Service. Both of these men were punished for opposing or complaining about Kim's directives and possibly his haircut, and the legislators all said all that. They didn't really say that about the haircut, but anyway, also adding that the vice forestry minister was executed for complaining about Kim's forestation plan. So as well as these 15 senior officials, the NIS also said four members of North Korea's orchestra, ladies and gentlemen, four members of North Korea's orchestra, in which Kim's wife had once been a singer, they were all executed in March also. The NIS said that they were executed by firing squad because it was alleged that they were spies, ladies and gentlemen. So anyway, that's what's going on in North Korea right now. They executed some top level, you know, vice minister type people, and also four members of the National Orchestra. Boy, I just don't even know where to go with that. Anyway, moving on to the situation outside of Chernobyl right now. There is smoke from burning forest in the Chernobyl exclusion zone. And apparently a lot of nuclear experts are very concerned that this smoke potentially could be causing the spread of nuclear contaminants across a long distances, especially outside of the exclusionary zone. What's interesting is that a couple of weeks ago there was an article talking about potential plans to kind of burn some of this forest off anyway, and there were a lot of people in the area who were, you know, obviously concerned about that, saying, wait, if we're going to burn all this stuff, there's potential that we could be dispersing or doing a secondary disbursement of some of this radioactive material. And so there was a lot of back and forth, and they decided they weren't going to do it, but isn't it kind of a weird coincidence that now there happens to just be an out-of-control forest fire raging about 30 kilometers near the Chernobyl plant? That's what's going on there right now. There are indications from the Ukrainian government that they have a lot of it under control, but we're still kind of keeping an eye on things right now. So we will give you guys an update as that continues. But again, if things get out of control there, a lot of that smoke could be carried off into Russia, and it could have a lot of significant health effects for those people out there as well. So we're just definitely keeping that in mind as we move forward here. Some news from South America this morning. Venezuela and their socialist government, just on Tuesday this week, announced a nationwide electricity rationing plan to tackle a surge in demand, which is being caused by the rising temperatures down there in the recent weeks. So the peak temperatures in Caracas were about 93 degrees this week, and in Maracaibo, the temperatures are hitting about 99 degrees this week. And so this country already has kind of a history of rolling blackouts and things like that. They have power outages from time to time, but apparently they're going to be going through that quite a bit more. I tell you, my heart really goes out to the people of Venezuela right now, because they are obviously, as a citizen of Venezuela, they are getting the short end of the stick. So anyway, these measures include cutting the workday for public officials down to 6 hours, also asking private companies to boost energy efficiency and also inspecting malls and factories to ensure they meet reduced power consumption targets. Now, they're not outlining an explicit rise in the cost of electricity down there for the people of Venezuela. Of course, people of Venezuela probably can't afford electricity at this point now, so we're going to see them cutting off the resources directly from the power plants, I think, is which way this wind is going to be blowing down there. But, man, what a bad deal happening down there in Venezuela right now. On top of not having things like food or electricity, now they're toilet paper, now they're running out of electricity. It's just absolutely crazy. And I think we had an article maybe a couple of weeks ago, all the McDonald's are out of French fries. I mean, talk about lack of civilization, ladies and gentlemen. I don't even know how to put that into words. Okay, moving on to news out of China right now. The navies of China and Russia are planning on holding joint military drills in the Mediterranean Sea for the very first time in mid-May. So just coming up here in a couple of weeks, and this was an announcement made just yesterday by Chinese Defense Ministry. And so these exercises are obviously illustrating China's continued engagement with Russia at a time when Moscow has been shunned by most of the international community over its support for the separatist rebels in Ukraine, which of course is all alleged at this point. But the joint Sea 2015 exercises are going to feature 9 surface ships, including 3 from China, that are currently taking part in anti-piracy patrols off the coast of Somalia. Again, this is coming from a defense ministry spokesman there in Beijing. And these drills are going to involve rescue, resupply, and other missions, and they will include the firing of live ammunition. They go on to say that the purpose of these exercises is to strengthen the friendly exchanges between the two sides and to improve the capability of the two navies to deal with maritime threats. I also wonder if this potentially could be a reaction to the fact that that Japan and the United States just announced earlier this week that they were basically redrafting all of their alignments and all of their allegiances in terms of military accord. For a long time, Japan was only really able to kind of deal with things that are in the immediate surrounding geographical area to Japan, and they basically nixed that this week. So, China obviously watching that situation very carefully. And, you know, another indication that we should probably talk about here is this whole Shanghai Corporation organization, which nobody ever really talks about. But this obviously, even though they're not explicitly saying it in this drill, when you see a large drill going on between China and Russia, you have to assume that the Shanghai Corporation is part of that planning and part of the logistics behind that. And it's interesting to me that up until really this year, I had heard really nothing about the Shanghai Corporation organization. And they're a standing organization just as large as NATO, if not larger. And they're fully invested in the BRICS Bank. I mean, this is a big-time organization that people are just not talking about. So anyway, big-time drills going on there in the Mediterranean Sea coming up in the next couple of weeks between China and Russia. Take that for what you will, I suppose. Also, more news out of Russia right now and also out of China. The Russian government has now approved the largest oil pipeline on the planet. Yes, that's right. So Russia's upper house of parliament, the Federation Council, ratified this plan to deliver 38 billion cubic meters of natural gas to China, and these deliveries are slated to begin as early as 2018. This bill hashed through the details of exactly how the 4,000-kilometer-long pipeline will be built and operated. The document laid out the basic conditions for cooperation between the two countries on the project, also included information about the design, the construction, and the operation of this cross-border pipeline. So again, the upper house ratified this motion just Wednesday this week. So again, the pipeline, which will be the world's largest, is scheduled to begin delivering 5 billion cubic meters of gas to China in late 2018, and it should become fully operational in 2019. This deal took more than a decade of negotiations between gas-hungry China and gas-rich Russia, and also comes now at a time when relations between Russia and the U.S. and Europe have deteriorated over this Ukrainian crisis. And China is one of the world's largest energy consumers, importing more than 170 billion cubic meters of natural gas just in 2013 alone. Russia is obviously the home to the largest known reserve of natural gas on the planet. Do you feel like the United States is being circumvented here, guys? Because that's exactly what's going on. So Russia, China, building the largest natural gas pipeline ever in existence. Think they're going to be getting around sanctions that way? I do. Also, just kind of as an ancillary note out of Russia, Russian authorities actually seized the assets of a confectionery factory, also known as a candy factory, owned by the Ukrainian president, Petro Poroshenko, in the Russian city of Lipetsk in order to block their sale. According to the parent company, Roshan, announcement on Tuesday. So since March of 2014, when Russia annexed Ukraine's Crimean Peninsula and the pro-Russian rebels rose up in eastern Ukraine, the Lipetsk plant has been raided by armed police, boycotted, and also accused by Russian politicians of supporting extremism. They go on to say that it is safe to say that the Russian side is deliberately taking all possible steps to prevent the company selling its assets in Russia. This is a statement from the people who run the Roshan organization, the parent company of this candy factory owned by Mr. Poroshenko. Poroshenko was nicknamed the Chocolate King, and he promised when he was elected in May to sell Roshan, which takes its name from the two middle syllables of his surname, and also had a pre-crisis annual sale of about $1.2 billion. But since this eastern conflict and resulting economic crisis, they have kind of complicated the sale process, we'll say. And so no announcement really has been made as of yet. So again, now Russia has seized those assets. It's going to make it really difficult for Mr. Poroshenko to sell that organization and recoup some of his money there. Also, some news out of Saudi Arabia right now. Kind of an interesting change of events yesterday. They did a bit of a card shuffling in terms of the royal family. And I didn't know this was something that you could do. I thought, you know, if you were related to the tart that pulled the sword out of the water and gave it to you, you were the king. And then everybody came out of your loins was kings after that. But I don't know. I guess I don't understand enough about the whole monarchy system. But anyway, this move is likely to solidify the ties with the United States for many, many decades to come, as King Salman of Saudi Arabia has undertaken a major reshuffle. He has appointed Mohammed bin Nayef as his new successor, and he has appointed his son, Mohammed bin Salman, as the second in line to the throne. So this decision by King Salman, who did succeed his late brother, King Abdullah, who obviously died back in January, he replaces his half-brother, Prince Makrin, with Mohammed bin Nayef, who is now the crown prince and heir to the Saudi throne. Mohammed bin Salman, who is 34-year-old, is King Salman's son. And his position right now as defense minister, the new deputy crown prince, has been overseeing the Saudi-led coalition bombing campaign against the anti-government Houthi forces in Yemen. So you can kind of see what's going on right now. Watery tart, who refers to, someone's asking me about my watery tart comment. That I think was my very favorite. Oh gosh, and I'm totally going to draw a space. Come quick, everyone. I'm being repressed. What is that? Monty Python. That's from Monty Python. It was one of the best things ever. I'll try and find a link to that little YouTube, because that's my very favorite outline of why the oligarchy, the monarchy system is silly. Monty Python did such a great job. Anyway, moving back to this. I don't know. I feel like this situation is interesting because obviously the guy who is running the show in terms of the attacks against the Houthis in Yemen right now is kind of being rewarded for that activity, being placed second in line for the throne in Saudi Arabia. So obviously, it's going to be tightening our bonds with Saudi Arabia going forward, because we can obviously count on them to be doing what we want them to be doing in Yemen and the surrounding areas going forward. So just kind of interesting. And here's a goofy story. We talk a lot about Iran on the news here, and this is a story coming out of Iran. I wanted to just bring this up because it really showcases just how crazy these people in Iran are. I mean, these people are obviously nuts. And showcasing that, a top Iranian military commander actually came out in the news yesterday. And he accused the United States, you guys aren't going to believe that. I mean, seriously, Iran is crazy. Accused the United States of being complicit in the 9/11 terror attacks in order to justify an invasion of the Middle East with the goal of ruling it. I mean, come on. Who would ever believe something that crazy? Anyway, apparently, Brigadier General Purdistan, who is the commander of Iran's ground forces, he made these comments in an interview with Iran's state-owned Al Alam news channel, which broadcasts in Arabic as opposed to Farsi. And according to the translation by the U.S.-based Middle East Media Research Institution, he referred to these current conflicts in Iraq and Syria and told the interviewer that these wars in the Middle East and these threats all stem from a comprehensive American strategy. Just crazy. Obviously these people need some freedom, ladies and gentlemen. We need to be over there providing some freedom for them right now. Okay, so that's what's going on in Iran. They seem to have their thoughts pretty well collected, I think. Anyway, okay. Let's go. We're moving on to the national news right now. Obviously, Baltimore in the news. The Baltimore streets were relatively calm last night. There were some protesters who were out up until the curfew for a second night in a row, but they were peacefully dispersed Wednesday night after this 10 p.m. curfew went into effect. There were not any riots to speak of last night, but there were actually quite a few protesters out doing the right thing, being peaceful and whatnot. Many of those people were wearing shirts that said Black Lives Matter. I don't really particularly care for that shirt. I think we should have one that says All Lives Matter, because that makes way more sense to me. But anyway, while these Baltimore protesters did remain calm, some of their counterparts across the country, not so much. More than 100 people were arrested in New York during a NYC Rise Up and Shut It Down with Baltimore rally Wednesday night. And Denver police arrested 11 people for charges such as assaulting a police officer, robbery, resisting arrest, disobedience to lawful orders, and obstructing roadways. Demonstrations are currently planned for today in Cincinnati and also in Philadelphia. Seattle, Portland, Oregon, Oakland are all on tap for Friday, which is also May Day or International Workers' Day, and that's often used to call attention to issues affecting the working class and minorities. So far, more than 100 people have been arrested during the fracas in Baltimore this week, and they've all been released Wednesday without charges because, essentially, the state prosecuting office was completely overwhelmed. They're good to go with maybe about 10 people a day, but when you bring more than 100 in, that basically cramps their whole style. So they had to either charge them or release them within 48 hours, and they chose to release all of them back to the streets. So also, as a separate note, at least 3 different people were shot in separate incidents in Ferguson, Missouri, late Tuesday and also early Wednesday morning as hundreds of demonstrators gathered in support of the protests in Baltimore. And 2 of these people were shot in the neck, while another person was shot in the leg. There is a suspect in custody in the latter case, who is a 20-year-old male from St. Louis County. The 2 victims shot in the neck were both hospitalized, and police are having a difficult time doing investigations because they're having rocks thrown at them, also in Ferguson, Missouri, which is not too far away from me. I still think we are not out of the woods on this whole civil unrest situation, but I do have some pretty good news regarding this Jade Helm thing. And I heard Marty bring this up on KBS last night. Fantastic show if you didn't get a chance to listen to KBS last night. But we're talking about this Jade Helm thing. Obviously, there's these huge drills that are going to be going on across the country. But in a response to these online conspiracy theories and all of this concern that people are showing regarding this military exercise, Operation Jade Helm, the Texas governor, Greg Abbott, did something pretty remarkable yesterday. And I think this is pretty notable. He's actually stated now that members of the Texas State National Guard, I'm sorry, the Texas State Guard, will be monitoring these federal troops in Texas. He goes on to say that during this operation, it is important that Texans know their safety, their constitutional rights, and their private property rights, as well as their civil liberties, will not be infringed. And so he is directing the Texas State Guard to monitor Jade Helm 2015. I love this. And it's also, as another ancillary note here, according to the Houston Chronicle, 2 Texas counties, Victoria and Goliad, have already had their portions of the exercise canceled without any explanation right now. So I really like this, and I wanted to go do a little more digging into what this Texas State Guard is. So here's the definition or explanation from the Wikipedia page. So it is one of the 3 branches of Texas military forces, along with the 2 branches. The TXSG falls under the command of the governor of Texas, and it is administered by the Texas Adjutant General, an appointee of the governor. And the other 2 branches of Texas military forces are the Texas Army National Guard and the Texas Air National Guard. The mission of the Texas State Guard is to provide mission-ready military forces to assist state and local authorities in times of state emergencies, also to conduct homeland security and community service activities under the umbrella of defense support to civil authorities, and also to augment the Texas Army National Guard and Texas Air National Guard as required. They are headquartered at Camp Mabry in Austin, Texas, and the TXSG functions as an organized state militia under the authority of Title 32 of the U.S. Code and Chapter 431 of the Texas Government Code. So there you go, ladies and gentlemen. It is essentially a state-run militia there in Texas. And to me, this is way more significant than I think there's probably a little bit of truth in the governor saying, I want you guys to go out and monitor this situation. But I would bet you a dollar against a hole in a donut, that those militia guys, if you're a militia man in Texas right now and you don't understand what's going on with Jade Helm, you don't deserve to call yourself a militia guy. I would bet you a dollar against a hole in a donut that these militia guys showed up at the governor's office and said, we're going to go monitor this. It might really look good if you go ahead and do some kind of order so that we don't look like we're overstepping our bounds. But considering the fact that this governmental organization and this military deal that's going on, Jade Helm, is kind of outlining people like us as enemies of the state or enemies of the government, we're going to go ahead and get involved here. So I think this is the first sign that the tide is turning, ladies and gentlemen. The governor, just to get back, I had a quick question from the chat room. His name, let's see, who is this guy? You think I know that? Greg Abbott, Texas Governor Greg Abbott is the one who is in charge of this whole shebang. And again, I think this is the first crack in the in this program going through. And if I was in some of these other states, New Mexico, Arizona, Colorado, Utah, I would be absolutely on board with trying to get involved. I would form a militia just to go out and monitor this stuff. I mean, to me, when they talk about what it is that they're actually getting ready to do, here's an Army Special Operations spokesman talking about what these troops are planning on practicing. And they're saying that these are emerging concepts in special operations warfare. This is not an emerging concept, guys. These are people who do not need training. These are the black bag Ziploc dudes that have running, that have been running dirty wars in the Middle East under JSOC for freaking 10 years now. These guys don't need training. They need to be acclimated to coming into your town and your house and zip tying you and black bagging you. And I'll tell you what too, if you don't, it may come to pass that some of these, military guys are going to step up and not do that. But if you don't think that our government has a contingency plan to bring in foreign troops who will not care one way or the other about coming into your home, kicking your door down, zip tying you up and taking you off to somewhere, you really need to start waking up, because there are forces out there that really think of us as enemies, us truth tellers out here. So anyway, I think Jade Helm, we may have seen a crack in the armor, and I'm very, very happy that Governor Greg Abbott is moving forward on this. We've got to go to the 3-minute break, guys. I have a little bit more American news. We have some important economic stuff. I've got an amazing health story that you guys are not going to want to miss, so keep it right here. We will be back in just 3 minutes. See you guys soon.
Chris and Sheree Geo here, founders of Truth Frequency Radio. We just wanted to take a moment to thank all of you for making TFR the biggest and the best independent radio station out there.
When we first entered the alternative media scene in 2009, we were really taken aback by the amount of infighting, backbiting, fear-based reporting, and ego-driven personalities. That's when we knew we had to set ourselves apart and set a new standard in broadcasting. And thus, TFR was conceived as a listener-supported station with no corporate or outside influence and limited commercial interruptions.
You can support our efforts by signing up for a VIP membership at truthfrequencyradio.com/signup or by making a donation at truthfrequencyradio.com/donate.
For less than $4 a month, you can ensure that TFR continues broadcasting for years to come. Real people, real radio.
Wherever you are, make it TFR.
Time and time again.
You need to come here and help us. We need assistance. Please.
Those we should be able to depend on let us down.
Federal and state and local officials saying help is on the way. Well, the folks here in Bell Harbor say show me.
Don't depend on the government to save you. Take action now so that you're prepared for the next disaster with MyPatriotSupply.com. Get the best prices on storable food, non-GMO seeds, water filtration devices, home canning equipment, survival and self-reliance books, and more at MyPatriotSupply.com. Call 866-229-0927.
We are hurting down here, and we need help immediately.
Before it's time to survive, it's time to prepare. MyPatriotSupply.com. MyPatriotSupply.com.
nutritious food is real body armor. It builds muscle, burns fat, improves digestion, and feeds the entire body the nutrients it needs. Did you know the U.S. government banned the hemp plant from growing in the United States and classified it as a Schedule 1 drug to hide it behind the marijuana plant? People have been confused about this plant for over 80 years, and many still don't know what hemp is. So now you know hemp is not marijuana, and marijuana is not hemp. They are different varieties of the same species. HempUSA.org wants the world to know these basic facts and to help people understand that hemp protein powder is the best-kept health secret you need to know about. Remember, hemp protein powder contains 53% protein, is gluten-free, anti-inflammatory, non-GMO, and is loaded with nutrients. Call 888-910-4367, 888-910-4367, and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Only at HempUSA.org.
Sound Doctrine Ministries with Kenneth Emmanuel.
Sundays on True Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the broadcast, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you guys so much for hanging out with us through that 3-minute break. And thank you guys all hanging out in the chat room right now. Kev Baker in the chat room this morning, ladies and gentlemen. Absolute amazing that he takes time out of his schedule. I don't know when he sleeps, ladies and gentlemen, but if you missed his show yesterday, you need to go back and download it because it was absolutely, absolutely fantastic stuff. Fantastic stuff. Appreciate all you guys being in there this morning. Huge shout out to everybody in the chat room. Let's move on. We talked a little bit about this Jade Helm thing, so I imagine we'll talk a little bit more about that later on today when Dr. Brooke Agnew joins us here in about a half an hour. So keep it here for that. Let's talk a little bit also about the new news coming out of the IRS right now. The Inspector General investigating this IRS's improper scrutiny of Tea Party groups has apparently found thousands of more emails from Miss Lois Lerner, and the agency official at the center of this controversy announced all of this just yesterday. So apparently the Treasury Inspector General for the Tax Administration has now found roughly 6,400 emails either to or from Miss Lois Lerner between 2014 and 2013 that it did not think that the IRS had turned over to lawmakers. So again, it brings the total up to about 35,000 emails so far, but this new treasure trove of 6,400 emails should have a lot of stories to tell. So we'll have to keep an eye on that and see what's going on. Another story that I'm not really very excited about, to be perfectly honest. Mrs. Clinton throwing her hat in the ring here regarding this whole police brutality thing, and it's really starting to kind of piss me off, to be perfectly honest. She's really going to try and reach out to some of these disenfranchised people and pretend that she's some kind of champion of the people. And so anyway, she was doing a speech yesterday basically talking about the deaths of black men at the police hands, at the hands of police, being something she refers to as unmistakable and undeniable. She also says there's something profoundly wrong with the disproportionate police stops and searches of African-American men. All of this I completely agree with. I just don't want to happen to agree with Mrs. Clinton. She also says that all the police departments should equip officers with body cameras. And here's where I'm starting to get a little bit leery about the body camera thing. We had a tech story the other week about retinal scanners that work from a distance of about 40 feet. And I really feel like, first of all, if Clinton gave a crap about people, that she wouldn't have had to wait until we've had so many of these poor unarmed people, generally speaking, being killed by law enforcement officers before she decided to do something about it. I also have to wonder if there's some financial gain to be had. You know, perhaps she's somehow invested in some of these body camera type companies. And I'm also concerned now that these administrative type people are getting behind the body camera movement, that they're probably going to be impregnating those body cameras with more capability than we would really like them to have. I'm not really a big fan of the bio identification from a distance. I certainly don't want law enforcement officers to have more capability to know about you without having a warrant to do so. That doesn't make any sense to me. It also falls into this whole beware system where they're giving you a threat assessment based on the things that you've put on your freaking Facebook page or wherever, before, you know, when they pull you over to issue a ticket of some kind. All of this stuff to me is a big muddy mess right now. And, Ms. Clinton reaching out to all these poor disenfranchised people as if she's some kind of, again, champion of the people. Just disgusting to me that she would use this opportunity to try and, build herself up in the eyes of people. So anyway, that's what's going on there right now. And also kind of a goofy story coming out of Hawaii that I wanted to touch on. I don't like this. There was a gentleman who was at a national park in Hawaii. He was at the, the Lava at Hawaii Volcanoes National Park. He was arrested and he was tasered in front of a whole bunch of people because he was flying a drone. Now, apparently, drone use inside of a national park has been made illegal, and it was done so, well, a couple of weeks ago, apparently. And of course, at this national park where this gentleman was at, there are clear signs posted, well, nowhere, really. I did find one on the website that I had to go digging for, outlining this new policy of people not being able to use drones at a park. But anyway, this particular guy, Mr. Sanders, he was of Pohoa, Hawaii, arrested and cited with interfering with agency functions and operating an aircraft on undesignated land. He was taken to a Hawaii County police cell block. He spent the night in jail, released in the morning on a $500 bond. Basically, he was approached by a ranger who was screaming at him, and he didn't really recognize the guy, as a ranger didn't really know what this guy was talking about because he didn't really feel like he was doing something wrong. Again, this is just one of these little quadcopter deals, not anything really significant. But the ranger got so perturbed with him because of his attitude that they tased him. And so there you go. That's a tasering, ladies and gentlemen. You start flying them drones around in a national park, that's a tasering. There you go. Good stuff. Okay, let's hop into the economic stuff right now. Where are we at with the indices? The Dow Jones currently down about 55 points in early trading, 17,979. S&P following suit down just a touch, 2,093. Dollar index is continuing to drop today, ladies and gentlemen. We are at 95.15, down about 0.2%, we'll say, so far. The euro following suit. I imagine by the end of the show, we will be at 1.12. We are at 1.119 right now, so I imagine we'll hit 112 on the euro today. Bitcoin screaming up in value at, added about $7 today at 235.45. Gold has been hammered this morning, ladies and gentlemen, down $30, $1,178 on gold. Silver also being hammered this morning, down nearly 5% at $15.96. So $15.96 will get you a bright, shiny bar of silver. Crude oil coming up just a touch this morning, also $58.92. So that's what's going on in the markets right now. Excuse me, pardon me. Let's talk a little bit about the global economic system. There's been some pretty startling statistics coming out of the EU right now, and one of them was the following. More than 30% of all government debt in the Eurozone, which comes down to about 2 trillion euros in securities, is currently trading on a negative interest rate. So with the advent of the European Central Bank quantitative easing, which began about 4 months ago when the 10-year Swiss yields turned negative for the first time, that whole situation has snowballed into a veritable avalanche of negative interest rates across European government bond markets. In this hunt for apparent safe assets, investors have thrown caution to the wind and are all collectively determined to pay governments for the privilege of lending to them. And on a country-by-country basis, the statistics are even more startling. According to investment bank Jefferies, some 70% of all German bonds are now traded on a negative yield. And in France, it's about 50%. And even in Spain, which is widely thought insolvent only a few years ago, it's actually 17%. Not only has this never happened before on such a scale, but it does mark a scarcely believable turnaround on the situation at the height of the Eurozone crisis just a little while back, when some of the European bond trades on yields that reflected the very real possibility of default. Yet far from being a welcome sign of returning economic confidence, there is almost a surreal state of affairs, and this surreal state of affairs actually signals the actual reverse, not the return to economic confidence. So how did we get here, and what does it mean for the future? Well, whichever way you decide to come at that answer, the second question is really not that good, ladies and gentlemen. So what makes today's negative interest rate environment so worrisome is really this. To the extent that demand is growing at all in the world economy, it seems again to be almost entirely dependent on a rising level of debt. The financial crisis was meant to have exploded the debt bubble once and for all, but there's really very little sign that that actually happened. So rising public indebtedness has taken over while households and companies were left out. And in terms of a wider credit expansion, emerging markets have simply replaced the Western ones. And this wake-up call of the financial crisis has pretty much gone unheeded. And one by one, all the major central banks have joined the money printing party. First, it was the U.S. Federal Reserve, then it was the Bank of England, later the Bank of Japan, and just lately now the European Central Bank. Even the People's Bank of China is considering quote-unquote unconventional monetary support of bond buying, which is really just about anything anybody can do now to keep this show on the road. So a lot of people probably contend that it's the central bank printing money itself, which is the primary cause of today's low interest rate environment. And up to a point, that's pretty difficult to argue with. But it's also the entire purpose of QE, which is to depress the yield on government bonds to a point where investors are forced to seek high risk alternatives. So all of this right now is official interference, probably has in no doubt influenced negative yields. And it also raises a deeper question, which is whether central banks are the primary cause of this collapse in the interest rates or whether they are merely accommodating wider forces in the global economy that they are powerless to influence, which would obviously include things like persistent sluggishness in demand and also productivity growth. Speaking of productivity growth, I'll hop over into the United States right now, if I can get that tab that I accidentally just closed to reopen here. The U.S. economic growth, I'm going to say, if I try and put this lightly, ground to a halt, I guess would be the most accurate way to say this now. The gross domestic product grew between January and March at an annualized rate of 0.2%, according to the U.S. Commerce Department. This is adding to the picture of an economy breaking sharply after accelerating for much of last year, and the pace well fell shy of the 1% mark anticipated by analysts and the market, which would now be the weakest quarter in a year. So again, economists, employers, and policymakers now face the challenge of determining whether or not the slowdown is temporary, stemming mostly from the unusually snowy weather in the Northwest, or quite laughably, a sign of broader problems. I think probably it's fair to say these are signs of broader problems. Also on an international front, just wanted to move back here. There was a new announcement just broke out over CNBC that Japan itself is now likely to join the AIIB within a few months. And this is according to the country's ambassador to Beijing. And it's also a move that would see Tokyo break ranks with Washington and leave the U.S. as the only big holdout right now. So again, Japan making this move to join the AIIB. We kind of figured that was going to happen, but now it's in ink. So there you go. Also, news coming out of Russia on an international economic basis. Russia's upper house of parliament, again, the Federation Council did ratify the agreement to establish the $100 billion foreign currency reserve pool for the BRICS group. So this is intended obviously to protect national currencies from volatility in the global market. So this has now been ratified. We've been talking quite a bit about whether or not this BRICS bank would eventually come to fruition. And apparently now they have got their currency pool figured out. So that's what's going on there. BRICS is moving ahead, guys. China is going to contribute $41 billion to the pool. Russia, Brazil, and India will all put in about $18 billion each. And South Africa's investment will be about $5 billion. So this fund is, again, expected to be maintained by a managing council and a permanent committee and a coordinator who will be from the country of the current president, which I believe right now is, in fact, Russia. So, again, moving forward on the BRICS bill. Also, Tyler Durden kind of brought up an interesting point, and I don't know if you guys will believe this or not, but just pointing out that the last 4 days have actually seen the second largest drop in the dollar index over the last 6 years. We just had those economic numbers. The dollar index is still continuing to go down today. And, you know, Tyler Durden starting to wonder if perhaps this is the beginning of this whole global unraveling, if the dollar is finally going to start losing its strength. It also poses kind of a problem for the talking heads on the TV, because they've been really talking quite a bit about the strength of the U.S. dollar being indicative of economic strength of the United States. So you kind of have to wonder now, what does the plunging U.S. dollar imply? I don't know. I don't think it's a great thing, though. So anyway, that's what's going on in your economic news right now. We'll hop over into the science and tech stuff. There was a massive explosion on the sun on the morning of April 28th, so just 2 days ago. Very large filament magnetism was stretching across the surface. There was, in fact, a coronal mass ejection that did erupt as a result of this massive explosion on the sun, but it so far does not look like it was earthbound. We're still kind of waiting for updates, but I imagine it's just interesting to think that while all of these earthquakes and things were going on, there were also these crazy large magnetic filaments going across the sun. I wonder if there's any correlation there with that. But that's what's going on there. Also, this crazy story about the Russian spacecraft. Have you guys heard this? The crew of the International Space Station now says that this Russian supply ship that went into an uncontrollable spin after its launch has now been declared a total loss. This unmanned vessel began tumbling shortly after its launch on Tuesday, and now apparently the vehicle will be falling out of orbit and re-entering the Earth's atmosphere sometime soon. Nobody really knows when. Nobody really knows where. The cargo ship apparently contained about 3 tons of food, water, fuel, clothes, and equipment for the 6 station residents. And Kelly, who's the American cosmonaut up there, says everything on board is just fine. We didn't really need that shipment anyway. But Kornienko, who is the Russian cosmonaut who's up there, said, "Nah, it's kind of a little concerning, actually." So anyway, there is a Russian spacecraft tumbling towards Earth right now. We don't know when. We don't know where it's going to enter the atmosphere. But that's, you know, just keeping you guys up to date on that. Hopefully it'll end up being visible. That could be something kind of neat to see, but hopefully nobody will be hurt by that thing when it comes down. Makes you just wonder, doesn't it? Also, this is a kind of a strange story coming out of Dallas Love Field Airport yesterday. A Virgin American pilot reported seeing a quadricopter drone ascending above him while he was coming in for a landing. The plane didn't have to divert or do anything. They were able to land, but this, somebody was flying one of these unmanned drones about 200 feet above the cockpit of this plane as it was coming in for a landing. You know, I kind of wondered when I first read that if this was some kind of dry run or a beta test for some sort of attack. It'd make a lot more sense if you could just strap some C4 to a drone and blow it up right over a cockpit as it was coming in, as opposed to trying to actually hijack an aircraft. But again, a lot of concerns about flying drones around airports, obviously. You know, these guys have enough to worry about with bird strikes and stuff like that. I cannot imagine what would happen if one of these guys coming in at a couple hundred miles an hour whacked into a drone. So if you guys are flying, you know, flying these drones above airports, I'd kind of caution you guys to maybe think that one through just a little bit more. Also, IBM has come out, and they're claiming now that they are one step closer to developing functional, scalable quantum computers. According to this company, IBM, they managed to overcome 2 of the key hurdles, demonstrating for the first time a square quantum bit circuit design, which is the only physical architecture that could successfully scale to larger dimensions. I am not going to sit here and pretend that I am an expert on quantum computers. If you want to find one, I would highly recommend talking to Kevin because he has been digging into this stuff a lot lately to be ready for our Woo Crew discussions. And so I'm not going to get into how this thing particularly works, but it is a fairly novel concept for them. It's very complex. It essentially is a square based, it's actually a square based on a square lattice of 4 different superconducting qubits on a chip less than 2 square centimeters or about a square inch. And it's ultimately going to allow them to scale these quantum processors up. And it's actually that this square array, as opposed to the linear one, that allowed them to search and detect for errors, which is one of the other new amazing things that they've decided that they're able to do now with this thing. So again, quantum computers are almost scalable at this point, ladies and gentlemen, because of IBM's work. And it's going to make our regular computers kind of a thing of the past here pretty quickly, I would imagine. Oh, man, this is a startling report, too, and I won't get too much into this, but there has been a report released now from the Pediatric Academic Societies. They have an annual meeting in San Diego every year, and they just had their meeting last Saturday. Apparently, more than 1/3 of babies are tapping away on smartphones and tablets, even before they learn to walk. And by the age of 1 year, 1 in 7 is using some sort of electronic device more than an hour a day. That is 1 in 7 kids below the age of 1 using a smartphone right now, ladies and gentlemen. Can you imagine the cumulative health effects that this is going to have on them, not to mention the warping of the brains? Oh, my gosh, just can't even imagine. But, yeah, that's the world we live in right now, ladies and gentlemen. 1 in 7 little kids getting the action on the smartphones. We've got to talk about this story. This is probably the biggest science story and health story I have ever read, and I think you guys are going to be pretty amazed by this. This broke on GreenMed Info, and it's a little bit complex, so you guys are going to have to kind of follow me through this, and I'll try and break it down. But this is an amazing new study, guys. This was published in the Journal of Cell Science, and this reveals an entirely new reason why it is essential that you guys eat your greens. As your mom always said, eat your greens. And I'm going to tell you why. Because it enables your body's mitochondria to produce more ATP energy when it's exposed to sunlight. And you're thinking, wait a minute, this, you're telling me I'm eating a plant and somehow that's going to affect my cellular mitochondria's ability to produce ATP energy when I'm out in the sun? That seems a bit crazy. But yes, that's exactly what we're saying right now. This study was called Light Harvesting Chlorophyll Pigments Enable Mammalian Mitochondria to Capture Photonic Energy and Produce ATP. You can look it up. This is indicating that by eating chlorophyll-rich diets, mammals, and by implication, you and me, can capture specific wavelengths of sunlight radiation that will translate to increased energy within the powerhouses of the cells known as the mitochondria. The researchers were working out of Columbia University Medical Center. They conducted a number of experiments in order to ascertain whether animals as well as plants can use light-absorbing chlorophyll molecules to capture light energy for ATP synthesis. And while it has been the prevailing wisdom for such a long time, it, you know, almost can't even remember, that plants are the only thing that can use sunlight directly for producing energy, which is called photosynthesis, it can now not be denied that not only do many animals consume chlorophyll through their diets, but this research has shown, research has been performed showing that chlorophyll metabolites retain the body to absorb light in the visible spectrum at wavelengths that can penetrate into animal tissue. So given these facts, the authors of this new study sought to elucidate the consequences of light absorption by these potential dietary metabolites. And what they discovered was simply remarkable. So this is what they figured out. They show that dietary metabolites of chlorophyll can enter the circulation, are also present in tissue, and can be enriched in the mitochondria. So that particular says, if you're eating chlorophyll-rich food, those cells enter your circulation. They are present in your tissue, and they also move right into the powerhouse of the cell called the mitochondria, right? So when incubated with a light-capturing metabolite of chlorophyll, isolated mammalian mitochondria and animal-derived tissues have higher concentrations of ATP when exposed to light compared to animal tissues not mixed with the metabolite. So they demonstrated through this research that the same metabolite increases ATP concentrations and extends the median lifespan of, they were working on a worm specifically during this particular one, but expanded the lifespan, the median lifespan of that worm upon light exposure, supporting the hypothesis that photogenic energy captured through dietary-derived metabolites may be an important means of energy regulation in animals. Absolutely. Oh, that's a great question. Somebody asking me a great question in the chat room. I'm not going to go there right now. But okay, so what are we saying here? We're saying that if this cell and animal research holds true for humans, a chlorophyll-deficient diet, along with the deficiency of sunlight exposure, could actually lead to significantly lower ATP production. And given this possibility, wouldn't it be amazing to begin looking at the green wavelengths of color in produce as a source of energy for the powerhouses of the cell mitochondria? It's as potential age-decelerating agents or as a means to increase one's own sense of energy and health by allowing you to capture the sun's energies directly within your body. I think, and from the work that these people have done, this is exactly what this research indicates. It means it's just so much. I mean, this is food for thought, literally, ladies and gentlemen, food for thought here. If you are eating a diet rich in chlorophyll-rich foods and you're getting enough sunlight, your body is able to produce more ATP on a cellular level, which is the energy that your cells run off of. This is remarkable. I mean, I don't think I've ever seen a study this remarkable. This is going, I mean, we're kind of flipping the entire physical universe on its head here, suggesting that animal cells can in fact now be powered by sunlight. Just absolutely amazing. Makes sense though, doesn't it? That the sun would be, here for everything else, and why not also for us? Just amazing. So eat your greens, ladies and gentlemen. Absolutely crazy. Here's another crazy story. There's a new study revealing that eating a Western diet rich in animal proteins and fats, in fact, greatly increases the risk of colon cancer. But the issue can be resolved quickly by switching to a high-fiber African-style diet. This study, you guys are going to love this. The study involved 20 black African-American volunteers who swapped their diets for an African one for 2 weeks. 2 weeks only. The result was a shocking drop in colon cancer risk. And in contrast, a group of 20 African study participants who switched to an American diet found their risk of contracting colon cancer quickly grew over the same period of time. So the volunteers had their colons examined before and after the diet swap, and scientists also measured biological markers that indicate colon cancer risk and studied samples of bacteria taken from their colons. Researchers said that they were not most surprised about the fact that the change did occur, but the fact that it changed so quickly, it only took 2 weeks, they actually said that they have seen a significant change in just 2 weeks. So changing your diet one way or the other can rapidly either increase or decrease your risk of getting colon cancer. The main reason for the changes apparently was the way in which the microbiome, which is a bacteria in the bowel, responded and changed its metabolism to adapt to the new diet. As Africans' diets, key component is fiber. And since most of the plant there is food-based, while in the U.S. the diet contains a lot of processed products, fat, and animal proteins. Colon cancer is the second largest cause of death in men and women in the United States. 136,000 cases per year, with 50,000 of those people dying from that disease. And in South Africa, colon cancer is much less widespread, with only about 5 out of every 100,000 people being affected. So worldwide, colon cancer is the fourth deadliest form of the disease, killing more than 500,000 people worldwide. It's just kind of remarkable that that change took place in only 2 weeks, ladies and gentlemen, that these guys switching in either direction drastically increased or decreased their risk of colon cancer. 2 weeks. I mean, that's pretty significant. It just shows you how much change you can make in your own body by switching over to like an actual supplement program or getting yourself off of really crappy food. Speaking of really crappy food, McDonald's in the news again right now. I'm probably going to get sued for saying something like that someday, but whatever. They cut 7 sandwiches from their menu. So they've actually bumped their menu up to about 121 things over the last couple of years, but they're cutting out 7 of the sandwiches. So if you wanted a deluxe quarter pounder burger, first of all, my hearts and thoughts and prayers go out to you, but you can't get one now. 6 chicken sandwiches and the honey mustard and chipotle barbecue snack wrap. I've never had any of those things, so I don't know. Kind of weird that they're cutting a bunch of chicken sandwiches out when they said last week that they're going to move to a more chicken-oriented menu. But anyway, we'll see what's going on with McDonald's in the future. Happy to see them kind of starting to lose some money. Wow, we are out of time for the news section, guys. Please do go check out the redpillreports.com. If there's any other news that we did not get to go through, I'm sure it will be there and it will be interesting to all of you. Anyway, we've got to go to this 3-minute break, and when we come back, the one and only Dr. Brooks Agnew will be joining us. We have many, many things to talk about. Please hang out in the chat room if you have questions for myself or for him. That will be a great place to put them. We will be right back in 3 minutes, guys. We'll see you soon. Keep it right here.
Chris and Sheree Geo here, founders of Truth Frequency Radio. We just wanted to take a moment to thank all of you for making TFR the biggest and the best independent radio station out there.
When we first entered the alternative media scene in 2009, we were really taken aback by the amount of infighting, backbiting, fear-based reporting, and ego-driven personalities. That's when we knew we had to set ourselves apart and set a new standard in broadcasting. And thus, TFR was conceived as a listener-supported station with no corporate or outside influence and limited commercial interruptions.
You can support our efforts by signing up for a VIP membership at truthfrequencyradio.com/signup or by making a donation at truthfrequencyradio.com/donate.
For less than $4 a month, you can ensure that TFR continues broadcasting for years to come. Real people, real radio.
Wherever you are, make it TFR. Did you know that the blue lotus flower was used by the ancient Egyptians as an aphrodisiac to experience feelings of euphoria and ecstasy? And ecstasy. And ecstasy. Did you know that Thai kratom was used by the Buddhist monks to produce a relaxing and dreamlike state? Did you know San Pedro cactus was used by the Native Americans to quest for visions and heal the body? Bouncing Bear Botanicals is your number one supplier of rare and sacred plants and a proud sponsor of Truth Frequency Radio. By clicking on the banner at truthfrequencyradio.com, you can learn more about a vast selection of entheogens, including Amanita muscaria, also known as the sacred mushroom. So click on the banner at truthfrequencyradio.com, and you'll also get up to $40 off your next order.
Archaeology, astronomy, alchemy, secrets of the Holy Bible, hidden codes of the Quran, demonology, Tesla technology, solar power, extraterrestrials in the ancient world. More than 500 documentaries, an experimental film lab of cutting-edge music and art, full-length movies, conference reports, and weekly TV shows. The Enigma Channel is the world's first truly global TV station. www.enigmatv.com. Intelligent television for planet Earth.
No hate, no hype, no fear.
You're listening to Truth Frequency Radio.
We are TFR.
Welcome back to the broadcast, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you guys very much for hanging out through that 3-minute break. And thank you all who are hanging out in the chat room right now. So excited to have you guys along for the ride. Very, very excited to be welcoming the one and only Dr. Brooks Agnew to the program today. If you guys are not aware of Dr. Brooks Agnew, you guys need to, first of all, go check out his radio show here also on Truth Frequency Radio on Sunday evenings called X-Squared Radio. It's kind of an open forum, scientific discussion type show. Absolutely astounding. Just another one of the fantastic hosts that we have to offer here at Truth Frequency. Very excited to be welcoming him to my program today. And for you guys who don't know Dr. Brooks Agnew, we have a lot to talk about because he is product of numerous public and private schools. He was a published author at the age of 13, ladies and gentlemen. He also assisted with lab research at the UCLA Brain Research Institute by the age of 16. He has been an instructor of mathematics at Gaston College. He was a professional assistant with environmental chemistry at Tennessee Technological University, and he also instructed graduate students at Western Kentucky University in the field of instrumental analysis. He graduated with honors, which means in the top 0.1% of his graduating class, guys, from Tennessee Technological University in chemistry and mathematics. He also continued his studies to achieve a master's degree in quality, also known as statistics, and he also has a PhD in physics, ladies and gentlemen. He began contracting in 1998 for numerous Fortune 100 companies. He's a retired full-time employment as an engineer for the automotive industry at the age of 43. He's led numerous billion-dollar corporations through the TS-16949 and the ISO 9000 certification processes, which I have done myself, and it is a major pain in the butt, ladies and gentlemen. So I'm telling you, this guy knows his stuff. He's also he's an author of several best-selling books, ladies and gentlemen. You can find them on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. You can also find all of his links to all of his websites and all of this information at redpillreports.com in the show page that we built specifically for him. As an interesting side note, he was actually the expedition leader for the North Pole Inner Earth Exploration. I mean, Brooks, you're just such an amazing, interesting gentleman. I'm almost flabbergasted trying to kind of get through your bio here because it's just so incredible. He's also currently the president of the Sirius Energies Corporation, which is a company that is designing really, really amazing looking electronic vehicles in the shape of pickup trucks. And that's kind of his main goal in life, is to displace as many gasoline powered vehicles as possible. So he really has his hands in a lot of different projects and in a lot of very interesting and diverse bits of research. It is with absolute pleasure that I welcome the one and only Dr. Brooks Agnew to the program today. Dr. Agnew, thank you so much for taking some time out to join us this morning.
Wow, thank you very much for the intro. It explains why I'm unemployable.
Just one of those people that doesn't want to work for somebody else or just have too much to give, you think?
Well, I don't know. I've worked for a lot of people, and I just decided halfway through my life that I was going to build my own company instead of building other companies. So it's worked out that way, and I'm happy doing it. It's a journey.
Well, everything is these days, you know what I mean? And so last time you were on the program, we had talked specifically about the Sirius Energies Corporation and some of the struggles you were kind of going through as you were trying to get through the regulatory process to bring these vehicles to market. And it's been a little while since we've chatted, and I think a lot of people out there might be interested in finding out more about the EV fleet, kind of the history of it, and just if you could kind of bring us up to speed on where we are today, I think people would really appreciate that.
Oh, sure, sure. Well, you know, anytime you do a vehicle launch, you know, there are so many details that you can't imagine, but the really frustrating ones are the ones that have to do with government agencies.
Right.
The EPA, the Department of Transportation has a division called the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. They have a checklist that's, I don't know, it's probably 650 megabytes of checklists.
Oof.
Which you have to go through if you're going to introduce an automobile to the American highway. It's why we have safe automobiles, you know, on the road today. But in the world of electronic vehicles or electric vehicles that don't use fuel, we have, you know, far less safety issues than you do with a vehicle that's hauling around 15 or 20 gallons of flammable fluid in a plastic can.
Right.
So, you know, we're trying to get the agencies to learn a new trick, which is kind of hard for an old dog. And if you've ever dealt with government bureaucracies, that's just what they are, old dogs.
Yes. So where are we at in terms of actually getting these things to market, sir?
That's a good question. We have just now come through all of our crash testing.
Uh-huh.
This is where we take the materials that we make the vehicle with, we feed it all into a very complex program that has been developed probably over the last dozen years, where accelerometer data has been collected by actually physically crashing vehicles into a 60-ton concrete wall,
right,
rolling them over. You collect all that data and you get enough information to make some predictions on how the vehicle might do without actually crashing it.
Uh-huh.
And over the years, the software has gotten so good that you can actually go completely through your crash testing program without physically destroying a vehicle. Same as airplanes. They don't crash or test fly jetliners anymore. It's all done by computer model.
Okay.
So it's just because of the data that's been collected over the years. Now, eventually, what will happen is the agency will select the vehicle off the line and they'll go crash it and see if it meets the standards that you reported. But in the industry, you know, companies are self-certifying. We say it meets the standards and then it's our liability that's on the line.
Uh-huh.
So the insurance companies, you know, require this advanced testing, which, excuse me, is actually more, and you'll understand this, statistically significant than crashing one vehicle. You can run the model 1,000 times and see the break points, what we call failure modes, much better in a computer model than you can crashing a vehicle one time. And that way you're sure that every single weld, every single bolted point, every single door latch will work as designed, if you design it with that kind of statistical treatment.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of complex, but it makes the industry interesting. And when you produce an electric vehicle that doesn't use any fuel, the first thing people realize when they get into it is how much more powerful it is, how quiet it is, and at the end of the month, how much more money they have in their pocket.
What about things like just insurance costs and stuff like that? How is it going to actually affect an owner in terms of, I mean, obviously the gas savings is going to be pretty significant, but what's the balance out between, you know, costs for charging and things like that and insurance? Is there anything that's going to change in that realm?
No, there's nothing really strange with the insurance. It runs about the same to insurers as a regular vehicle does.
Hmm.
In fact, I think over time, what will happen is they'll be cheaper than a gasoline-powered vehicle because they have less loss. Insurance is all about gambling, basically. They figure out how much money they want to make. They figure out what the risk is, and then they set the rate based on that. So they know, statistically speaking, how many houses are going to burn down, how many people are going to run red lights, you know, how many people are going to roll over on the side of the road, and by what age bracket and sex and state. And then they just set the rates accordingly. Well, there aren't really, in fact, there's enough data now since electric vehicles have been out since 1904, I believe. In fact, the first one was built in 1898. And, in all those years, and by the way, up until 1912, electric vehicles made up 70% of the vehicles on the road.
Really? I didn't know that. Wow.
Cars, trucks, and buses, and trains. The reason in 1912 the balance began to shift is because in 1912 the electric starter was invented. Women could not drive a gas-powered vehicle because they couldn't start it. They didn't have the upper body strength to crank over the engine.
Right. Harkening back to those days where you see them put the crank in the front of the car and run that thing over and then get the car started that way. So you're saying that they just couldn't do it back then.
That's it. And it was a black art, you know, starting those cars. You had to retard the spark a little bit depending on how cold it was. You had to choke it. And, you know, it's like kick-starting a Harley Davidson.
I was just going to say that. Yes, sir.
You do it three or four times and then you're ready to call your husband. You get me an electric car.
That's right.
They used to call them hummingbirds because of the sound that they made. And they were all electric. And then, you know, slowly that began to change as people wanted to drive further and further. So now we've kind of come full circle. Gas is very expensive. 90% of the travel that's done with a car is all short range. We drive 20 or 25 miles to work. We sit there all day long in a chair at a desk or at a workstation, and then we drive 20 or 25 miles home. Well, that adds up over a year's time. You know, you've driven 15,000 miles at $3 a gallon, and you're getting 17 miles of the gallon. It adds up. It's a lot of money. Now, when you're running a business, and this is where we come in, when you're running a business, and let's say you have 200 trucks in your fleet, you have to make predictions of what we're going to spend in the next 12 months, and here's how much we're going to make in the next 12 months, and the difference is supposed to be profit. But when the fuel prices can change up to 50% in a single year, you can't make safely those kinds of predictions. You have to pass those costs on to your customers, which your customers don't like. So what we do is we eliminate the cost of fuel. So we did a model for a large car parts company, and just replacing one truck at each one of their locations, the model saved them $30 million a year in fuel. Now, that's a lot of profit. You can pay for a lot of trucks with $30 million a year.
Heck yeah.
And, you know, plus if gas goes back to $4 a gallon, which everyone is pretty sure it's going to do as it runs out, or, you know, somebody bangs a couple of trash can lids together over there in the street.
Right.
You know, it's unpredictable what it could go up to. We see that the Chinese and Indians have moved to hedge the market. They've bought up super tankers full of oil. Uh-huh. So the glut that we thought was going to last for a year is probably only going to last for 3 months. And then, you know, two countries are hedging all that oil. So they'll be okay because they're not oil producers. But, you know, when Saudi Arabia begins to cut back in production and the price begins to go back up, which it much, and this is where the economics becomes fascinating for me, the stress that it puts on the world, Russia and Venezuela and other oil producing countries that have a large portion of their GDP as oil earnings, they're adversely affected by the low price of oil. We're adversely affected by the low price of oil. We have about $62 billion worth of bonds that are about to go junk because they were used to fund the expansion of the North Dakota oil fields. Mm-hmm. It was supposed to pay out over a period of 10 or 12 years. Well, they only got 1 year of production out of it, and then Saudi Arabia decided to feed the glut and not cut back in production, which drove the price down to about $43 a barrel.
That's right.
You can't make money because shale oil costs about $63 a barrel to get out of the ground. So they're making their payments, but they're making them in arrears, and they're getting further and further behind with each month that oil stays this cheap. And I don't know about you in your state, but we really haven't seen that much of a decline in the price at the pump, even though oil's cheap.
We've seen a little bit. I think we're probably looking at about a $2 a gallon. I have to admit, I got rid of all of my motorized vehicles and I've moved on to pedal power at this point, only because I really like your flatbed pickups, brother. I really want to get one of your flatbeds, but I haven't been able to make that. I haven't been able to make that change happen yet, but I have eliminated the gas powered vehicle because I spend all my time in town and there's just no reason to have a car as far as I'm concerned. But, you know, I was kind of on a way to a topic there, and I kind of dropped my train of thought. Totally lost it. Totally lost it, brother. What were we just talking about?
Well, you know, we were talking about
price at the pump.
The price at the pump. In 2009, gas was $2.48 a gallon. Today it's $2.35 a gallon.
Right.
Not that much difference, really.
It doesn't make any sense at all. And the other thing, we haven't seen any decline in food prices, which to me, if everything is being shipped by, you know, because of oil, then that should be the number one thing that we see a change in, is the food prices should go down. And I'm still paying $4 for a loaf of bread right now, so I don't understand what's going on.
Well, you're exactly right. And the, some food items have gone up 400%, like dehydrated mushrooms. Buy a can of Campbell's soup today. It's about $1.50 when it used to be, you know, 45 cents.
That's right.
Those prices never come down. And that's why the entire market from top to bottom gets affected. What we try to do in establishing an electric pickup truck, which as far as we know, it's the only one in the world, we're about 3 years ahead of our competition, if we have any competition. The truck's affordable. Even without rebates, it stands up against the Chevy Silverado. But with rebates, it really gets affordable, especially in California. They just raised the rebate for our vehicles to $10,000.
Wow. What is that rebate then offset in terms of total cost?
You get a federal rebate of $7,500, you get a California rebate of $10,000, and then there's another incentive, and that is when the major car makers reach their limit of cylinders that they can sell in California, they have to buy capacity from electric vehicle makers, and our trucks are eligible for 2 credits, and I think right now a credit is selling for about $2,340. So that's another approximately $4,600 that you get to take off the price of your vehicle.
Wow.
So that's about $22,000 right off the price of the vehicle on the day of sale. So you're buying an electric truck for less than you can buy a Chevy Silverado for, but you don't have to spend $5,000 a year to drive it.
That is just remarkable. I'm thinking about the cost of, you know, the other electronic vehicles on the market, like the Teslas, which are obviously exorbitantly expensive. But to be able to get into something like yours with $22,000 worth of tax incentives, that's absolutely remarkable. I can't imagine why, you know, just given that information, that everybody isn't lining up to buy one, especially if you're in California. My goodness.
Yeah. Well, they are kind of lining up to buy them. But right now we can't allow them to buy them in the United States. We have a export market that's growing pretty well. Mm-hmm. These are uncertified markets that we can sell the trucks into now because there are no agencies standing in the way between the customer and the business like there is in this country. In this country, we have, at least in our industry, 3 agencies that are interfering with the commerce. And it is extremely expensive for the consumer and for the businesses.
Yeah, I can imagine that it is trying to produce anything like this in the United States these days. It's just got to be absolutely ridiculous. I have a question from the chat room. Somebody's curious about what the carry capacity is in one of these pickup trucks, sir.
These trucks are rated for 1,000 pounds, which is twice what a Ford Ranger was rated for. They were rated for 500 pounds.
Wow.
We can carry 1,000 pounds 100 miles between charges. Now, if you're not driving freeway speeds, you're just driving around town, you, of course, can go a lot further than you can if you're driving, you know, 75 or 80 miles an hour because of the wind resistance. But we find most of the driving is about 15% highway driving and 85% under 50 miles an hour.
Right.
Where these trucks really shine is when you're stuck in traffic. Everybody else is idling their paychecks out of the exhaust pipe. You're sitting there running your air conditioning or your heat, and that's all the power you're using. And you can run the air conditioner for about 2 days on a battery pack.
Are you serious?
Yeah. We designed our own electric air conditioning that doesn't run on 12 volts like the ones you see in some of the cars to increase mileage. This is the high voltage air conditioning. And he uses very little power, and it's very cold.
Wow. The fact that you've even included air conditioning is pretty remarkable because that's kind of a high watermark for most of your gas-powered vehicles even anymore these days, you know.
It's true. We have electric heat, too.
Wow.
The heat's on in 15 seconds, and it will warm the cab up in about 2 minutes, no matter how cold it is. And, of course, unlike a gas-powered vehicle, our vehicles are impervious to altitude.
Right, that's right. Wow. And now, last time you were on, I thought we talked a little bit about the inclusion of solar panels with these vehicles as well. Am I correct on that?
Yes, the solar panels are integral, and we've got the efficiency up to almost 20%. We're just shy, 19 and something is the last calculation we had, which is pretty good. So with the solar panel, you get approximately 20 miles for free every day.
Wow. And how long would it take if you were just say, you know, if it ran relatively low and you let it out in the sun, how long would it take to fully recharge the batteries without you having to plug it in?
It depends on which pack you have. If you have a large one, which is a 50 kilowatt hour pack, that's the second largest pack in the industry,
mm-hmm.
It'll take about 6 or 7 days to fully charge the battery. It's not for that. If you have our smaller pack, which is what we call an urban pack, it's made for people that have like 5 mile routes and they do say 10 of them a day. But they come back and plug in 6 or 7 times a day. Then you can get by with a much smaller pack. And, then it would only take about 3 days to fully recharge the pack. And this is really good for the islands.
Yes.
They have a little electricity. So they have lots of sunshine. They have maybe 20, 25 miles a day of driving, so they almost will never have to plug in.
Wow. I've got another question from the chat. Somebody is encouraged by that amount of weight that they can carry, and they're saying, I can definitely put a dressed moose and probably all my gear and stuff, but are you guys planning on offering any kind of all-wheel drive or maybe a four-wheel drive component sometime in the future?
Well, we have played with all-wheel drive. It is a power hog, to be sure. What we've noticed with pickup trucks and all of the designs that we tested and converted a lot of gas-powered trucks over to electric, in the gas-powered version, when they're empty, a truck has no grip in the back. You can get stuck on wet grass.
Right.
And that's why four-wheel drive is pretty important, because you got to push that heavy front end through the mud or snow or whatever. So what we did when we designed the truck, we 50-50 between the front wheels and the back wheels. And that way it has grip at all times. And I've driven this truck in the mud, in the snow, in wet grass, wet roads. I have never been able to make it slip. I mean, you can burn rubber with it. You can do a donut with it, but it doesn't get stuck because it has that all wheel grip and it has fully independent suspension with a high ground.
As you would expect. Yeah. With a nice truck. Yeah.
And the bed is designed not like a Ford Ranger, which has only 44 inches between the wheel wells. Our beds are fully 55 inches flat on the inside. So you can put a 4x8 sheet of plywood in it, close the tailgate, and still have room to stand your basketball team beside it.
Oh, I love it. What about moving into the future? Like somebody in the chat room was wondering about the technology behind the slow discharge capacitors. And I'm just curious, you know, what are the kind of changes that you foresee coming down the pike that are going to allow you guys to offer more in the future?
Well, I'm glad you asked that question. You know, when you talk about the wave of technology, out on the very front of that wave is a little frothy area right there on the leading edge.
Mm-hmm.
And just ahead of that is where we are. So the trouble with capacitors is that they change voltage as they discharge. So you charge them up to, let's say you charge, and then you start discharging it. Immediately it goes to 390, 380, 370, and obviously you're trying to make wattage or power. Mm-hmm. So your current is changing as your voltage goes down. That's why batteries are so sweet, because they stay at the same voltage for about 90% of their life, and then they start dropping off.
Okay.
Capacitors do have an advantage. Unlimited cycles. You can charge them and discharge them millions and millions of times. So obviously a combination of the two would be the best thing.
Uh-huh.
The capacitor would help you take off from the stoplight, and the battery would help maintain your voltage. We are constantly testing with this. We have not as yet found a cost-effective way of doing that. There is very little movement in the battery industry. All the batteries are made in China, and Chinese manufacturers have an attitude of, this is what we make, you will buy it, and you will like it.
Right, okay.
So when we go to China and we sit down with them and say, look, we want some other features on this battery, we want a different lug, we want a different shape, we want a different, you know, characteristics of this battery, it is like, it's like trying to move Washington.
Right.
It just doesn't happen. And there's no battery manufacturers in the United States. So this really makes it tough on us, on our industry. Something we have to design it ourselves, build it ourselves in our own lab, and it's extremely expensive. We just can't get things to a manufacturer. So we're dealing with what's currently available. I mean, we're not NASA. We're the automotive industry, and we're innovative. We like to create things, and we got ideas. We have patents pending, but there are no companies out there making it. So we're kind of stuck with batteries for now.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Okay. Well, we've got to run to this quick 3-minute break. Dr. Brooks Agnew is our guest. I highly recommend you guys check out evfleet.com and also Sirius Energy Corporation. You can learn more about these trucks. I'm really, really. EV-Fleet.com is the website that you want to check out. Also, X Squared Radio here, fine program on Sunday evenings on True Frequency, hosted by the one and only Dr. Brooks Agnew. We're going to go to this 3-minute break, guys, and we will be right back, and we'll kind of broaden this discussion into some current events and things like that, and call into bear some of Dr. Brooks Agnew's amazing research and historical knowledge. So we're going to go to this 3-minute break, guys. We're going to be right back. Keep it right here at TFR. See you in a second.
Joe Joseph here for Truth Frequency Radio. According to AllGov.com, since 9/11, a total of 238 Americans have died from a terrorist attack. That's 24 a year, making your chance of dying 1 in 625,000. Conversely, you have a 1 in 1,000 chance of becoming a victim of police brutality. Yet we spend trillions of dollars on the war on terror while militarizing an abusive police force. At TruthFrequencyRadio.com, we have a team of the very best personalities in independent media. A team that's dedicated to bringing you reliable and rock-solid news and information so you can arm yourself with knowledge and join the fight against worldwide oppression and tyranny. Truth Frequency Radio. News without the hate, hype, and fear.
Sure, I'm glad I tried that new Iodine Now microplant powder formulation.
You liked it, huh? I told you it would change your life.
Yeah, I feel fantastic, and I have so much more energy.
Hi. Hi, I have your iodine now delivery.
Oh, yes, my second order arrived. Thank you so much. Hey, buddy, why don't you ask this lady out for a date? Good idea. Now that I'm taking iodine now, I have the energy to enjoy my life again. It looks like you're getting back your old charm, buddy.
I'd love to go out to dinner with you. And can I try some of the iodine now?
Of course you can. You just delivered me a one-year supply. Your future looks really great. I finally agree with you.
Iodine Now, part of the MicroPlant Powder family. MicroPlant Powder is available in 15 different formulations. Call 888-910-4367 or visit the website to find the one that's right for you. And listen to our new audio descriptions for every product only at MintUSA.org.
Here at MyPatriotSupply.com, our customers are number one. Built on a self-sustaining business model, we don't owe our existence to big banks or big business. Instead, the company was built by you, the customer. The success of My Patriot Supply is a testimony to the loyalty and dedication of each and every one of you, to our old-fashioned values and top-rated customer service. These elements alone have made us the number one choice of patriots everywhere. We believe that being prepared should not be a luxury reserved by people with large disposable incomes, which is why we have the products you need at the prices you can afford. We bring you our Patriot Pantry brand of storable food, which features top-of-the-line flavors and carefully packed to store for 25 years. Plus water purification systems, non-GMO heirloom seeds, survival gear, and much, much more. Visit MyPatriotSupply.com or call 866-229-0927. That's 866-229-0927. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Saturdays and Sundays on Truth Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the broadcast. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you guys very much for hanging out with us through that 3-minute break. And thanks to all of you who are hanging out in the chat room right now. If you guys have questions for our very special guest, Dr. Brooks Agnew, today regarding any of the things that we're talking about and some of the things that I'm thinking we're going to be talking about, please put them in the chat room and I will try and steward them across and weave them into the tapestry of this interview. Very excited to have the one and only Dr. Brooks Agnew with us today. You can check out his website, which is ev-fleet.com, and also x2-radio.com will tell you everything you want to know about his Sunday night show here on Truth Frequency. Again, kind of an open forum scientific discussion, and they get into a lot of amazing topics on that program as well. Very excited to have Dr. Brooks Agnew with us for the rest of the hour today. Now, Dr. Agnew, we were kind of talking about the development of batteries and things like that, and I'm just wondering if you have had any type of correlation with or working with the Tesla guys, since they apparently released all of their patents out. And I'm wondering if, you know, their charging stations, if you guys are kind of working in conjunction with them, or if you're going entirely a different route, sir.
Well, those are two good questions. It's true that Tesla made the announcement that they're sharing all of their patents, but the only things that we were interested in sharing, they weren't interested in sharing.
Oh, okay.
One of the things that people need to be clear on is that Tesla was founded by 26 inventors who got together and started converting a Lotus, it was a two-seater, into an electric vehicle. And they began using computer batteries, and they're still sticking with that same kind of format. They got to the point where the Lotus was selling. They'd sold it in 85 countries. They still hadn't made a profit, but they're ready to launch another car. And it had the 4-star crash rating, and they wanted a 5-star crash rating. And this is an incremental bleeding process. They ran out of money. So they had to go back to their investors to ask for more money. And one of those investors who was willing to put money in was the former owner of PayPal, or one of the owners of PayPal, Elon Musk. Mm-hmm. Elon was willing to put in more money, of course, but he wanted more stock. So he ended up getting enough stock that he became the largest shareholder. He didn't own a majority of the company, but he was the largest shareholder.
Okay.
And within days, he decided to take over the company as a hostile takeover, and six of the original founders, two of which were my friends.
Wow.
So there's no love lost there. So Elon Musk is not Tesla. Elon Musk is a hostile takeover artist that took over Tesla. Now, one thing he's very talented at, is selling stock. And that's how their company has stayed afloat. They still have not made a profit after 16 years in business. So we have tried to work together as an industry. I've been in this industry since 1978. That's a long time. Got in my first manufacturing facility in 1988. I helped launch the Nissan Altima. I helped launch the Cadillac CTS, the Pontiac Solstice. One of many engineers on the project. But still, to be involved in the industry that long and to have that much experience with that succeeded and programs that failed puts me in a good position to try to attract all of the independent car makers that make electric vehicles to come together in kind of a coalition. Not that we would share, you know, our design ideas with each other, but we need to have some muscle if we're going to represent ourselves in Washington. You know, I go speak to Congress, and then Elon speaks to Congress, and then, you know, the owners of the other electric car companies talk to Congress, and they don't pay any attention to us because they don't realize that together we control about 40,000 jobs, but separately, we're all small. So if we don't end up working together, at least in some kind of coalition, with some kind of leadership, then we're not going to succeed as an industry in this country. We're only going to be getting the table scraps,
right,
which we're getting right now. And what I mean by that is there are a lot of suppliers that we need. Airbag suppliers, seatbelt suppliers, brake assembly suppliers. They won't speak to us. They don't talk to us. We have to use existing assemblies off the shelf and adapt them and make them work.
Wow.
So very few companies have enough economic horsepower as an independent to slug their way into these suppliers. It's a lockout. They just do not supply us. So, and this is, it's a tragedy, but that's the way it is.
Well, so, I'm sure it's all being led by the big, you know, the big oil lobbyists and the big automaker lobbyists in Washington as well. It has to be difficult to try and overcome the power of the lobby groups there at this point.
Well, you know, what we do is we do the same thing I guess Washington does. Our vehicles are powered by electricity, which is all 100% American made. So we go to the power lobbies, you know, the big power distributors, Duke Energy, PG&E, they're the ones that make electricity. They're the ones that want electric vehicles. So we have their lobbyists go up against the oil lobbyists, most of which are foreign. And they fight the battle for us.
Wow. Well, that's probably be a fairly good, I mean, looking at PG&E, that'd probably be a fairly good person to have in your corner. I don't know necessarily that I agree with everything that they're doing right now in California. We talked to Deborah Tavares quite a bit, and you know, obviously the owners of PG&E right now are kind of tied in with the Rothschild organization. So I guess it's okay. You know, they're making the transition away from their first power, which is oil, to the thing that they control now, which is electricity. So I guess that's kind of an interesting change. But I'm glad that you guys are having some success, or a lot of success, as it turns out. And I said it last time you were on the air, but I do intend to buy one of these vehicles at some point in the future. That flatbed pickup truck to me is just one of the neatest looking vehicles I've ever seen. And I really want to encourage you guys to go out there, listeners, and check out the EV-Fleet website, because I tell you, you're going to have to get in line behind me to get one of these things, guys.
There are a lot of people that have already given us checks. They're standing in line, and we're getting ready to make a board decision where we may sell these vehicles as kits, Uzis, instead of selling them to fleets. The fleet sales obviously are bread and butter. It's kind of like league bowling to a bowling center.
Right.
But that doesn't mean that if an individual comes in and wants one truck, we can sell it to them in some level of disassembly, put it together, which is about as hard as putting on a radiator cap, I guess.
Right.
Then it's theirs. And they can drive it and they're walk away from gasoline forever.
Wow. I'm just so enthralled with this whole idea, man. And I tell you, especially once you bring up the idea of being able to build one at home as a kit, now you got a project that your friends and family can get involved with and you can spread the information around. And I tell you too, I bet you if you drive down the street in one of these things, you're going to make a lot of friends whether you want to or not, because people are going to want to come up and talk to you about your truck.
Well, that's probably how we get most of our publicity, is all the Twitter and Facebook and Instagram pictures that people send out there every time we take the truck off the farm here.
Right. Right. Oh, I love it. I love it. Okay, I want to change gears just a little bit because, you know, we do a lot of news and current events and stuff on this show. And these days, it's difficult sometimes to put attention to every single blip that comes across our radar. But you had mentioned to me yesterday a specific story about a couple of guys that were, chased down in Texas. Do you want to maybe talk about that? Because I found this to be just, again, one of these stories that I'd missed my radar, and I'm absolutely astounded. I was astounded when you told me about this yesterday. But could you share some of that with us, sir?
Yeah, we were actually doing a story or an investigation on Jade Helm and some of the movements that were taking place, and trying to coordinate this with what's going on our side of the border and this Mexican side of the border. Story popped up in the lexicon and I read it and it just blew me away. So I followed it up on it and it was in fact true. Minutemen are private citizens in Texas who help Border Patrol by watching that don't have any fence and where their river is kind of shallow. And then if they catch people coming across, they will detain them, call Border Patrol. Border Patrol will come and then process them. Mm-hmm. Well, one evening, a black SUV came charging across the Rio Grande, hit the dirt road and took off. So it took three pickup trucks full of Minutemen 15 miles to corner this SUV and stop it.
Right.
When they stopped it, they got the two guys out of it, called the Border Patrol. They came, and using their authority, they searched the SUV and found 1,300 pounds of cocaine.
Wow.
Now, this is about $55 million in street value cocaine. That's not the interesting part of the story. The interesting part of the story is that black SUV is registered to the CIA, and both guys in it had CIA identification.
Wow.
Well, they were arrested, of course, and they've been interrogating them for almost a week now. Uh-huh. And denying that they know these two guys. The FBI and the DEA are also saying, that's not our cocaine. We don't have any idea where that came from.
Right.
And I'm trying to get an interview with one of the Minutemen now. I'm getting close. But some of the questions might be, what did you take to Mexico to get the cocaine with? Was it arms? Was it money? What did it do with the cocaine when you brought it back into the U.S.? Where were you going with it?
Mm-hmm.
Who do you work for? And, of course, I don't know if they're getting any of this information. But this is proof positive that our own government is involved in the drug war, not on the side we thought they were.
Well, I mean, I don't think anybody in the chat room right now or anybody listening is actually surprised by the fact, but the fact that it's come out in mainstream news that there were actually two CIA guys arrested trying to bring $55 million of cocaine into the country via an SUV, that's a startling story to put out in the mainstream. I mean, obviously, you don't have to go too far back into history. Just look at Laos. The country of Laos has had more bombs dropped on it than any other nation in the world. We've never had a war there. But that was because the CIA was set up there and they were running drugs and doing things like that. I mean, it's a $600 billion a year industry. There's a reason that we're in Afghanistan guarding the opium production right now. If you guys don't understand that, that we're cutting into the CIA's currency here when, people are doing drug, you know, running outside of the CIA, obviously the CIA has got their hands as far into the cookie pot as you could possibly be at this point, don't you think?
Sure. The fact that this cocaine was stamped with the Sinaloa cartel Scorpion and the fact that it came from Mexico also clued me into another story, which I've been following for about 3 months now. And this is a story of laundering cash. $200 billion in the year 2014 was deposited in HSBC Bank in Mexico. In fact, it was so much cash that HSBC actually contracted a box maker to make a special box to stack $100 bills side by side in such a way to go through the teller window, because they were depositing about $1.3 million a day.
Wow.
In $100 bills. And they were bringing it in sacks and bales, and it was embarrassing, you know?
Yeah.
So they had to have these special boxes made so that the cartels can pack the cash into these boxes, and then they just bring the boxes in and feed them through the window.
Okay.
Now, once the money is deposited, it needs to be laundered. They need to account for it somehow. Well, they found a branch that was willing to cooperate, and it was located in Suffolk County, New York. So they transferred the $200 billion to Suffolk County, New York, stuffed it into thousands of phony bank accounts. Now, I don't know if you've ever tried to open a bank account without a driver's license, but it's pretty hard.
It is difficult, yep.
Formed literally tens of thousands of these bank accounts and shoved the money in there. Now, it would never have been found except that that particular bank had hired an outside contractor to help them on the compliance side. And he stumbled into these accounts. And by the time he was finished, he had a 1,000-page dossier complete with the account numbers, the employees that were handling the money, how much money came in. And the only thing he couldn't find out is where the money was going out of these accounts. The best thing he could do, he went to the bank officials, and they said, we don't know what you're talking about. None of this makes sense to us. We've never seen any of this before. So why don't you get back to work? So after about 6 months of this, he said, that does it. I'm going to the law. So he went to the U.S. District Attorney in Suffolk County and reported the dossier. And the district attorney, the DA, her name was Loretta Lynch.
Wow.
Now, she's appointed by Barack Obama, and she has been nominated to be attorney general. So she decides not to prosecute, not to file any charges whatsoever. She covers her rear by filing what's called a notice of deferred prosecution, which means, yeah, I could prosecute, but I'm not going to. So CIS, which is really the bank, international banks police, decide to fine HSBC $1.92 billion, a paltry amount, just the cost of doing business.
Mm-hmm.
No one was prosecuted. No one was fired. No one was reprimanded. The going rate for the legal system to look the other way is about 20%. That means that somewhere $40 billion into a black budget account. And that's why Loretta Lynch was nominated to be attorney general. Now, they asked the question of her, and she very Janet Reno-ish sides, but they didn't stay on the question. When it came back around to voting her in or out, 10 communist Republicans decided to turn coat and vote her nomination approved. So now she's the new attorney general. She has 631 days to do her deeds, and she is owned by that $40 billion.
That is just such an exorbitant amount of money, Dr. Agnew. I don't even know how to, I mean, to really try and put that in your mind that just through this one bank, just through HSBC, and probably just at, you know, the head of some specific cartel in Mexico, that they were able to funnel that much money. And then the fact that Loretta Lynch was essentially the U.S. district attorney in the district, allowing all of that to go on. That's such a flooring piece of information, Dr. Agnew.
Well, the crazy thing is that, excuse me, after a year, the contractor went back and checked, and none of those employees have been fired, and they're still laundering money.
You're kidding.
No. I'm not kidding.
Wow.
They're still laundering money. So where does that money come from? Where does all those They come from us. So when I get on my radio program, sometime during the 3 hours, I say, look, if you want to see this all go away, you want to see all the, you know, illegals go home, you want to see this border thing not turn into an issue anymore, you want to see all those balance out, stop doing drugs. If you stop buying the drugs, you will cut off the money supply for this crime syndicate that is in Washington right now, and we will get our republic back.
Hmm. Well, I just wonder if that's going to be a – I mean, it seems like there has to be a market out there. Do you really think that this whole $600 billion a year drug market is just centered on the United States? I mean, is it just the United States people who are consuming all of this stuff and funding all of these, or is this a global thing?
No, I think it's a global thing, but we're clearly doing $200 billion a year,
right,
in drugs just in this country.
That's just such a remarkable number to me, especially now given this whole Flocka insurge that we're seeing, this is synthetic, the new zombie drug that's hitting Florida. And I guess I heard some stories that it's all the way up in Chicago at this point. You know, it kind of stands to reason that people are not going to give up the drugs, Dr. Agnew. So I'm kind of the other opinion that we need to at least legalize the stuff that isn't necessarily super, you know, detrimental to people, and see if that will maybe pull some of the pressure off of the importation of some of these really, really toxic things.
Well, China went through this twice. They fought two wars against Britain over it, because Britain processed opium and fed it back into China to keep them literally doped up all the time, so they fight. And that's what's happening to the United States. And we have a drug war going on, but it's a drug war to keep the competition out of the drug business, I think.
That's right. I would fully agree with that. But to me, it's just such a shame, because the hemp industry, which is, you know, obviously not related to the drug industry, is something that, you know, China and Canada, they make billions of dollars on the hemp industry. And here in our country, you know, we won't even allow the states to have access to seeds to try and figure out if they could even grow hemp. So there's so much stifling going on from the agenda side, trying to keep people from being self-sufficient or keep people really under the thumb of big government. Probably a lot like what you're dealing with trying to get electric vehicles to the road, sir.
Yeah, it's kind of daunting when you go to the Department of Energy or the Department of Transportation, or you go talk to the people up at the EPA. It's, you know, they require us to put a fuel economy label on our window.
Right.
For years and years and years, we had the little yellow label that you see on the water heater at Lowe's. You know, it says this appliance will take $521 a year to operate.
Right.
And our customers love that. But the fuel economy label has 14 different indices on them, none of which the consumer understands. They're numbers that make no sense to the consumer. And I go up there and sit down face to face with them, and they call our truck a motor vehicle.
Oh.
And I say, you know, really, as far as you're concerned, we make a toaster.
Right. I was going to say, for your gas thing, you just put a little infinity sign, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
And just run it off like that.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So, you know, we can get around it. The stuff that frustrates me the most is when, you know, it's the attitude. For instance, let's say I have a 1990 Camaro, and I'm going to pull the engine out of it, the gas tank and the exhaust system and everything has. And I'm going to put a high torque electric motor in this and hook it up to that 5-speed transmission. And I'm going to have an electric Camaro. No emissions.
Right.
Do you realize that that's a violation of the Clean Air Act? And it's subject to a $1,000 fine and a year in prison?
Art, wait a minute. You're saying if I had any older gasoline powered vehicle and I decided to convert it into an electric vehicle, completely no emissions, nothing, I could go to jail for that?
That's correct. It's called tampering. They don't call it modification at the EPA. They call it tampering.
Wow.
You are tampering with a certified vehicle, and it is a violation of the Clean Air Act.
That's just insane. But it kind of does make a lot of sense, though, in the respect that you don't actually own your vehicle once you register it, because that's kind of one of this whole obfuscation of language things. And you can get into Roger Sales' show will come up after mine, and he talks about things like that. But, you know, you don't actually own your vehicles. And, you know, that really reminds me, too, Dr. Agnew, of a story that I read this week about General Motors and John Deere. Essentially talking about how they're trying to outlaw the ability to mess around or repair your own tractors or your own vehicles, when it comes down to the software that they're including with those things. So you might own the tractor, but you don't own the software that runs the computer. And if you try to do anything with that, they'll come and take your tractor away from you. I find that to be really, especially in America, where we have a history of tearing stuff down and building it together and, you know, tinkering with things, you know?
We call it improvement. That's what we call it.
I like to, yeah. I like to think of it as adjusting things until they need to be fixed again.
Sure.
If it's not broken, adjust it until it is.
In the United States, I don't know how many billions of dollars this industry's worth, but every AutoZone, Advance, Summit Racing, you know, all of these different sports magazines, it's all about horsepower. It's all about making things more efficient and faster and have more horsepower and, you know, make them better than the factory made it.
Mm-hmm.
They don't go after any of those modifications. You can put a 600 horsepower motor in your Mustang and you're fine. But boy, you pull that gasoline motor out and put an electric motor in it and they'll hunt you down.
That is just absolutely astounding to me that they would have the audacity to do something like that. I'm actually pretty speechless right now, to be perfectly honest.
It is audacity. It is really. And the guys that have been at the EPA, I mean, God bless them, they've been there. This is going to really blow your mind. 40 years. 40 years. The same people. 40 years.
Wow. Well,
no modernization at all.
You know, and the issue too is with people like those at the EPA is that's not an electable position. We don't really have any ability to go in and turn those people over. And then you have probably, I would imagine, this revolving door syndrome where you've got guys from the EPA going and working for Monsanto or going and working for the, the vehicle companies and then coming back to the EPA. Or look at all the stuff, all the concessions that they made for Halliburton, allow them to pump crap into and out of the ground, you know.
Not so much those industries you mentioned. EPA is pretty much owned from top to bottom by the oil companies. I know you say, well, gee, but they fine them all the time. You see, the EPA is not funded by taxpayer money. It's funded through enforcement actions. So if the oil company is their major source of capital, what officials do you think are going to go to work at the EPA? The ones that come from the oil industry.
Absolutely.
And it's a revolving door in and out of that industry, just like the FDA is a revolving door with Monsanto.
Mm-hmm.
And just like the Defense Department is a revolving door with Boeing and Raytheon and all the other defense contractors.
Yeah, we're in a pickle, brother. We're in a pickle here. But we're out of time, so we're not going to be able to fix it today. I do want to highly recommend everybody does go check out Dr. Brooks Agnew's websites, ev-fleet.com. You can also check out the x2-radio.com. Please do check out his absolutely wonderful show on Sunday evenings as well. Dr. Agnew, thank you very much for taking some time out to talk to us today.
Thank you. Keep up the good work at Red Pill. You guys have a great program.
Well, we were going to do our best, and right now it's coming down to the listeners and listener support, and if they continue to support us the way they have been, I think we'll be here for a good long time. Ladies and gentlemen, that is it for the show today. I hope you guys enjoyed it and took some value away from it. Stay tuned right now for the Roger Sales Show coming up next on TFR. We'll see you guys tomorrow morning, probably in the afternoon, also during the Kevin Baker Show in the chat rooms. We'll see you guys later on. Take care. Have a wonderful day, guys. Bye-bye.
Truth Frequency Radio is your number one source for news and information. Without the hate, hype, and fear, we are proud to bring you cutting-edge programs like The Kev Baker Show,
The Christopher Everard Show,
The Freedom Link with Joe Joseph,
Truth Frequency with Chris and Shuri Geo,
Red Pill Reports
with J.D. Moore,
X-Squared with Brooks Agnew,
Down the Rabbit Hole with Popeye,
Freaky Friday
with The Woo Crew,
Waking Up the Masses
with Robert Bruce,
Phoenix Rising Radio,
and dozens more.
Did you know you can listen from any computer, mobile device, or from any telephone by dialing 832-225-5308.
Or call into your favorite show toll-free at 866-37-TRUE.
Uncensored talk and news you won't hear in the mainstream media.
24 hours a day.
Truth Frequency Radio. Wherever you are, make it TFR.
Truth Frequency Radio.